You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Rob, we got a great guest today. By the way, I was just in Germany. I was touring with my band, another actor with a fucking band, dude. But you know what? I love it. Left on Laurel is the name of our band. Have you heard some of our music? You have?
No.
You liked it?
I haven't heard any of it.
Well, our album's coming out soon. Will you buy one?
Maybe.
Just say you won't.
I won't.
Yeah, I know you won't. You'll make me give you one, and then you won't even listen to it. You'll give it to your brother-in-law or something that loves me.
That's likely.
But you don't love me.
That's likely what'll happen.
Anyway, our guest today is Jennifer Morrison. You've seen her in many things. House. She was in a Star Trek movie, wasn't she?
Yep, and her dad is Jim Morrison.
That's not true.
No? I thought, yeah.
Jim Morrison.
From The Doors?
No, it's not. That's not who it is. Or Van. Her dad's not Van or Jim. She was in Warrior with Tom Hardy, Nick Nolte. She's a great actress, man. And we have a really special story. My dog, Blanche, I got her in Salt Lake City. And Jennifer was there, and she helped me get this dog. She was inspirational.
Yeah, you guys stole the dog?
And we didn't steal the dog, but we rescued it from the Humane Society. And she's got a lot of great stories. She's a worker. She's one of these people that just love to work. And, you know, she's great. Inside of You is brought to you by Canvas People. Hang on. I just went to JCPenney.
And you took some portraits by yourself?
I took some pictures from my band Left on Laurel, which I'll be posting. But you know what I did as a gift? Because the band, they don't listen to my podcast.
No.
I went to Canvas People, and I'm getting pictures framed in, like, canvas.
You're getting them blown up?
For so Christmas. Yeah.
So you guys are huge?
Yeah. We wore, like, Santa hats and... You know, like, we rode a sled. It was fun. It was, dude. It was, we had a ball. It was really cheap. But the Canvas People, man, it's where it's at. I'm telling you, these are unique gifts. Rob, we talked about this before. You did it for your brother-in-law.
I have tons of Canvas prints from all around my
house. One in my guest room right now.
Yep, there is.
You need Tom Welling to sign.
Yep, he's doing it.
Yep. I think this is pretty, why don't you tell them a little bit about what Canvas People do?
Well, Canvas People, they take your favorite memories and they print them so you can cherish them and make beautiful prints that are on your wall.
It's as simple as that. It's affordable and it's unique. And instead of going, hey, here's a framed picture, Canvas People, you can put it on canvas and it just looks so much cooler and it's unique.
Yeah, it looks like a work of art.
Yep, and now is a special, very limited holiday offer. CanvasPeople.com is offering their popular 11 by 14 photo canvases for free.
That's right, guys. It's free. These normally sell for $69.99, but for this week only, you'll pay nothing. All you have to do is cover shipping and handling.
To get your free canvas, text IOU to 797979. Just pay shipping and handling.
This offer won't last. Text IOU to 797979. That's IOU to 797979.
Message and data rates may apply. I think you're going to really enjoy this story. It's a nice story. So let's get inside of Jennifer Morrison.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Where? It's kind of far away, the table, from her, isn't it, Rob?
What about this?
But
that's where it always is.
Yeah, that's fine, but I'm just saying, if the table was any clother, I sound like Chevy Chase in some movie, clother, like a Christmas Vacation when he's frozen. Norma, here's the problem. If we move that, Rob would be closer to me, and I don't like that.
I don't like that either.
I don't know. I just met Rob. I don't know.
Jen Morrison, thank you for allowing me to be inside of you.
Oh, God.
Well, that's just something we say. It's not just something new.
He's never said that before. He's lying.
But to you, it's new because you obviously haven't heard the show. You haven't listened to it. That's fine. It's a new show. Our numbers are skyrocketing lately.
Listen, I had faith in you without even hearing the show. I feel like that says more.
Why did you have faith in me?
I'm just saying, like, I'm here. It's not like I listened to the show and vetted it to make sure that it wasn't going to go weirdly.
It's going to be weird.
You looked into it, didn't you?
I really didn't.
You really didn't?
I honestly just didn't have time.
You didn't. You're an incredibly busy person.
Yeah.
You are.
I'm not. That sounds so obnoxious when someone says it.
It's honest, aren't you? Some people have to be busy. Some people will go crazy.
I don't want to be busy, though.
I don't either, and I try not to. Why do you always work? Are you just so talented? I know you're a Steppenwolf grad. I know you've been all over the country. You've been in major motion pictures. You have been in successful movies, TV, all this stuff. But you haven't, I mean.
I feel like I just gave you permission to stalk me by doing this podcast.
Well, I told you I got to do some research, but I knew stuff about you. Now, no, how do we meet?
I don't remember.
Well, that's a good start. We met with my friend Dax.
Okay.
I think he knew you, mm-hmm. and we went to your apartment, and I don't know where it was, mm-hmm. and I think you had a roommate.
Was my apartment, do you
in
remember
Studio
what
City?
Year? Oh, in Studio City. So that was the one that was on Bluffside, probably.
Maybe, I don't the remember Archstone. The address. That would
felt,
be stalking.
Yeah, that felt a little bit like Melrose Place over there.
But I remember I was like drawn to you. I was like, wow, she's really attractive, and she's really funny, and you had no interest at the time, and it was fine. It was just totally cool. I was like, you know what? Plenty of fish in the sea. She's not into it. She's a Midwestern girl. It doesn't matter. You got to just like. But I remember that. But you were also, you said you were here with a group of people or whatever at my house.
I at some point ended up at your house because I remember
that was with
the
Dax.
Outside
Dax
of your
was
house.
Friends with you.
Yeah.
You don't remember being
well,
friends
no,
with Dax?
No, I remember being friends with Dax. I don't remember how I met Dax either, though. Like, that's what's weird. I remember, you know, being friends with him, and his first wife was, her last name was Morrison.
I don't think she was married.
Oh, or I guess like
it was
long...
his open relationship girlfriend.
Brie. Oh.
He talks about her.
But
in the
her last name is Morrison, so I remember that connection.
Yeah,
I think that's how he and I started talking at some point. He's like, "Oh my god, my girlfriend's last name is Morrison."
That's crazy.
Yeah.
My god.
Okay. I don't know. I feel like I have memory issues.
Do you remember meeting me though?
No. I mean, I remember knowing you. I know we went to dinner. I know we talked a few times. I know at some point I ended up at your house because I remember your house.
Okay.
But I don't remember.
That just sounds like a horrible nightmare or a blessing. Or look.
You probably had a group of people over.
Yes, of course. Why would you be over here if there wasn't a group of people over? There's no reason to trust me. I'm a 20-something-year-old actor who's... Here's the.
You had no hair.
That's the thing.
I remember you had no hair.
I saw you at this convention, which was Salt Lake City.
No, that was. I don't know. They all run together.
It
was either Toronto,
matter.
Atlanta, or Salt Lake City.
It was Atlanta, and I went up to you, go, hey, and you looked at me like.
No, you came into focus.
You're being nice. You're being nice, but then you noticed me.
No, at first. Yeah, but see, people give me shit for this because I'm honest when I don't remember.
Good. I'm not.
And people are like, oh my God, how can you do that? You know, how can you just say, I don't remember this person? I was like, because sometimes people think they know me and they don't. And then it's really awkward if you pretended like you knew them and then you work out that you don't know them at all. And then they know you were lying.
But here's the thing. It takes too much time for someone to come up to you and go, hey, man, where do we meet?
Yeah.
Or, hey, how, if they just come up to me and they say, hey, how are you? How you been? I'm just like, great. How are you? Because most likely the conversation will end soon.
Right.
If you say, I don't remember. And then it's like, wait, you don't remember. And then it turns into a 10-minute conversation with someone you'll never see again.
Yeah, but see, look, I said I didn't remember. And then here we are.
Ooh. That's true. You looked at me and then you went, oh my God.
And then yeah. I said, oh my God,
and
you
gave
have
me
hair.
A hug and you were really sweet. I was like, oh my God, she hasn't changed. You haven't changed.
Thank you.
You really do stay. This is something like I was stalking your Instagram. I was just looking at stuff. I always have people ask questions and mm-hmm. stuff. But I was looking at your Instagram and Karen Gillan, who's on the show,
mm-hmm.
she commented, oh my God, how do you do like something? You're so in shape. And I noticed that because do you tell your age? You don't tell your age, right?
No, I mean, I prefer
is it
not
on,
to.
Is it on Wikipedia?
I'm sure it's on. Yeah, I'm sure it's
so
on.
So we could just say it.
Yeah, I'm 39.
I wasn't going to say it. I was just kidding. And you said it.
Well, it's
it
on the internet. I mean, there's nothing
look,
we can do about it.
You look like 29.
Thank you.
It's got to be harder for women. It is harder for women,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you have to work out every day? Is it something that you do you like to do or you feel compelled to do it or you, you know?
I think it started as feeling like something I had to do for sure. It's a part of my life in a way that I really enjoy now. So it's something that I just, yes, there's a vanity to wanting to stay in shape and take care of my body and all that stuff. But then the other side of it is like mentally and creatively, I feel better when I work out every day.
Well, do you think it's intimidating to men, though, who want to like, you know, want to ask you out when they see how like you're so in shape, you're so together, you're rich, you know, you're smart. You and I noticed this too. I looked at all these guys, the relationships that you've had,
mm-hmm.
and they're just really beautiful people. And that's intimidating to a guy like me. I'm looking at like I'm an average looking guy. You know, I've got a personality, but I look at you and I'm like, God, she's just. But she goes out with this guy Amori from Prison Break. He's like a Brazilian bombshell. He goes out with this other hot. What the guy? What the fuck's this guy's name?
Oh God, which
my
one?
Assistant go when I said Sebastian
Stan.
My friend Shira. Literally had an orgasm on the phone just from the name. Are you attracted to really attractive people?
Hang on. Let's just, for a second, let's look at this group of men, and they look nothing alike.
Yeah, well, they have one thing in common. They're tens.
They are tens.
But you didn't stay with them.
But it didn't work. But I don't really have a type. Like, everyone's always like, what's your type? Like, if you look at, and I'm only listing the relationships people happen to know about because I obviously don't want to bring attention to things that don't need attention. But, you know, if you look at the relationships that the world happened to know about, which is Jesse Spencer, Amadi Nolasco, Sebastian Stan, I think those are the three that the world kind of knows about.
Right. From work, sort of. Two of three.
Kind of. Because, like, you know, Jesse, I feel like, is the only one that I always have a rule that I don't date anyone while I'm working with them. And
so
Jesse,
after you could, yeah.
Yeah, Jesse was the only exception to the rule because we worked together for 6 years.
I had that rule too.
And it was sort of kind of like, this is crazy. We're working 20-hour days. We're not meeting anyone else. Like, we obviously have this attraction. What are we going to do? Wait 6 years to find out what this would be? But with the exception of that, I always feel like you don't want to blur the lines because you don't really know. When you're in the foxhole with a group of people, you have this really intense, very quick intimacy with everybody. And it's hard to sort of sort through that and figure out what feelings are yours, what feeling are the character, what feelings are just because you're like in this thing together with someone. So I always feel like if there's something really there, then it'll still last afterwards, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd rather not make it muddy and weird.
Are you friends with these people after?
Most of them.
Most of them?
Yeah.
It seems to me like you're the one who usually ends it.
Oh, you're really just going for it.
I'm not even. This is wait, Rob. What do you call this? You have a name for it. He said this with a smile.
Genuine ignorance.
Genuine ignorance. I like that. I almost think that should be my podcast. Genuine ignorance, because I'm not trying to. I say things sometimes, and I'm not even trying to. I just there's something that
but if you are aware of the phrase genuine ignorance, then you're not genuinely ignorant.
Well, he said it. I didn't make it up. He made it up.
Right, but now you know about it.
Well, I'm being genuine, and if sometimes it sounds ignorant, then that's, I'm sorry. You're always busy. You're always working. This makes relationships harder,
that's
right?
That's true, yeah.
Do you tend to date guys who are sort of, in a way, unavailable, or like, you know, that you have your own space a lot, and you'll see them a little or a lot?
There might be some truth to that. I don't know. I don't know that I would ever say that I intentionally made that decision. It's really tricky, particularly because of the network television schedule. So, I mean, if you add up the combination of sort of guest arcs I did and then doing House for 6 years, How I Met Your Mother for a year, and then Once Upon a Time for 6 years, it became nearly 14 years, 14, 15, give or take, of like nonstop 18, 19-hour days between memorizing, getting up, pre-call, all that stuff. So when you're doing that and you have a contract and you feel like
you need your time.
No, I don't mean that. Like, you feel like the luckiest person in the world that you get to do what you love every day. And you're so grateful and excited. You're like, I don't want to be mad at this, you know, but what you are trading off is time to be yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So that there's like a really tricky push and pull there where I think probably my dating history would be very different if I hadn't been on those shows. Because, yeah, I mean, you meet someone, and then if that person is available to see you the three weekends away from where you are, when you happen to come home again, you're like, oh, we'll go on a second date. This is exciting. This person's available when I happen to be available. You know, and not to say that I haven't, obviously, I've been very attractive and connected to the people that I've dated, or I wouldn't have dated them, but you don't necessarily kind of learn what you want and what you don't want in the same way that I think someone who doesn't have that schedule does.
How much does charisma play in a relationship? Like, if you meet somebody and they're just really charming, they make you smile, they're fun to be around, is that above looks?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, what if the looks are like a 7?
Are we talking about you? What's
no, I'm
about
Rob, actually. Rob, my producer. All right, let me take this back. Because, you know, let's say life was different for you.
Yes.
Let's say you were still back in Arlington Heights.
Okay.
Illinois.
Yes.
You know where I'm from. You know where I grew up.
Where?
Indiana. Southern Indiana.
Yeah, very, very similar to Arlington Heights, Illinois.
Probably. I've never been to Arlington Heights. Go ahead, Rob. You're begging to say something.
I grew up in Hoffman Estates.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit. We're neighbors.
Yep.
Estates?
What high school did you go to?
Fremd.
Yeah. Oh, we competed with you guys. You guys were 211, District 211? Or
yeah.
Yeah, because we were 214. But we would play.
I didn't play,
our
but.
Sports would cross
yeah,
with
Rob
you guys.
Rob was a nerd.
He wasn't a nerd.
No, you weren't a nerd. You're not. He's an athlete, dude. This guy can hit the freaking softball.
I bet.
He can. He's like a great athlete. I was surprised when I saw him. I think he was surprised that I was better than he thought I'd be.
You were better than I thought you'd be.
A lot better, let's be honest.
You guys are so cute.
Can you believe Rob's 29? He has a kid already.
30.
What?
30. With a little baby.
Holy shit.
Can you believe it? Could you imagine yourself back in Illinois as a 39-year-old woman with an 11-year-old and a... You'd certainly be married if you lived back in Arlington.
I don't know.
I'd be married if I was in Indiana maybe two or three times.
Maybe. I don't...
What was it like growing up? Did you have good parents?
I have great parents. My parents are still together.
Teachers, right?
Yep. My dad was a high school music teacher, and my mom worked with him because he had a nationally competitive high school marching band.
What's a music therapist, though? Your mom's... My sister. Your sister's a music... What does that mean?
So she went through grad school to do all the normal sort of studies that you would go through to be a therapist. And alongside that, because she's incredibly musically gifted, I guess I'm not going to explain this as well as she would. So whoever out there is a music therapist who's listening to this, forgive me for however I messed this up. But what I do know is like she works with anyone, especially kids who have trouble communicating. So a lot of people think, oh, music therapy is like you play therapy to make someone feel better, or you play music to make someone feel better. It's actually using musical instruments to help someone communicate when they don't have words.
Wow.
So, you know, kids who are autistic or have Down syndrome or have had strokes, or adults who have aphasia from a stroke, anyone who has language taken away from them in some way or struggles to access it in some way, she uses music to help them express themselves. And it really is incredible to watch because
that's beautiful.
Yeah, you watch these kids who might be throwing tantrums because they can't express that they just need water, or they need a hug or affection. They don't have the access to language to do it. And so she lets them develop a language with the instruments that they're gravitating to, and then they're able to communicate, so then there's less frustration. And then when language starts to become available to them, they transition into being articulate a lot faster because they've been able to express themselves through this sort of musical language. They now have that skill set and they can transfer it into actual words.
And to me, music to a lot of people is everything. Like for me, I always wanted to be a musician. I never had the greatest voice, but I started a band and I just love it. I feel good when I'm playing it. There's something just special about it. And my mom always had these 70s love songs and these 80s mm-hmm. growing up, you know, and yeah. I always had music in the house and it just made me happy. Even today, you know, I need Steve Perry's Foolish Heart playing on the radio.
Yeah.
And in the car and I'm calm.
Yeah.
And it creates like, so I could understand how someone who has communication problems, music, like, also, you played the clarinet?
Yes.
Is the clarinet the smallest instrument, or is that the flute?
No, I think a flute's smaller.
How big is a clarinet? Show me a...
It's like... You know,
that's a long thing.
Yeah. It's not like a... I wouldn't consider it like a sexy instrument.
I didn't say it was. What's a sexy instrument?
Like the kazoo.
That's not a sexy instrument.
I know, a guitar. Guitar is a sexy instrument.
Ooh.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I think most string instruments, I think, are, I don't know.
You see those over there?
Oh, yeah, see? Yeah.
Those are five guitars right there. So, all right, you played the clarinet in high school?
I did.
Were you good? Can you still pick it up and play it?
Yeah, no, I'm very good. I don't really know what I'll ever do with that skill. I would need to get my endurance back, but yeah, I was very naturally good at it.
What does a clarinet sound like?
It's a horn instrument.
I don't think any instrument sounds like that.
Yeah, that's terrible. I can't picture.
I don't know how to explain what a clarinet sounds like. I mean, can we pull up some clarinet music?
Rob? So your parents were there. They were good. They were present. They were teachers. They educated. Because you're a very well-educated person here.
Thank you. Yeah.
I could sense that. Do you date guys that are equally smart or smarter? Or can you date guys that are...
That's the string part.
You know what's great is we could play this and we don't have to pay for it because it's so old that they can't charge us.
There you go. That's what a clarinet sounds like.
Can you play this?
Yeah, I have played this.
You can play this?
Yeah, I've played this solo.
Can you play this for me sometime?
I don't know. Like I said, I need to get my endurance back.
All right.
It's about to get pretty.
That's actually... keep playing it.
It's pretty. Yeah, just like that.
Oh, that's gorgeous. I could listen to some classical occasionally. Mm-hmm. What kind of music do you listen to?
I have a pretty wide spectrum. When I'm working, I listen to classical music almost exclusively because I can't really concentrate when there's lyrics. So when I need to be really focused on something creatively, I have my classical music that I go back to. In the mornings when I get up, I always put on like Chet Baker, jazz. Like that's sort of I have a very extensive morning routine. And so there's always kind of sort of chill music in the morning. And then like I like hip hop and I like, I mean, I even like Top 40. I know everybody kind of like thinks that's not
Top
a cool
40
thing.
Now?
And whenever, you know, like see, I just, I don't have, I'm not real picky. I'm not going to sit in the car and listen to that over and over again. But if I get in the car and that's on, it's not going to bother me. You know
okay,
what I mean?
Okay, well, I'm going to give you a test here. Can you listen to the Commodores?
Yeah.
Can you listen to Foreigner?
Yeah.
Can you listen to Chicago?
Yeah. I love all those bands.
You could Gin Blossoms, Wallflowers,
yeah.
Eagles.
Yeah.
England.
I've been to Eagles concerts. Yeah.
Me too. Okay. So
could you only listen to those bands?
Over and over. I'm kind of like until somebody sticks something in my ear and goes, fucking listen to this. It's hard. I'm a little bit, what's the word, stubborn? Mm. I kind of like my 70s and 80s and 60s, even a little 50s. Yeah. I like easygoing music, but sometimes I'll, you know, like that one song by, what's the, like...
T-Rex?
No, the car. People are doing the videos with the car and getting out of the car and showing them like, Kiki, get your breakdown.
Drake?
Drake, with the song. You know what I'm talking about when they're doing the videos with the car. They're filming themselves out of the car with doing the dance.
I don't see a lot of music videos, so I don't know.
It's all over.
In My Feelings?
Yeah. Can't play that, though. We'll have to pay for it, right?
Mm.
Anyway. So, okay, so you listen to everything. But you seem like you're like a, I mean, look, you're very laid back. You're chill. You're cool. You're fun. But you're also, I don't want to say elegant.
Well, thank you. I'll take it.
I mean, are you someone who likes to go eat at really nice places all the time?
No.
Can you go get a burger at like somewhere easily?
100%.
You can. You eat meat. You're not a vegan?
No, I mean, I try to, as I've gotten older, this is part of being healthy, I definitely eat less meat, but not because I have a really strong aversion to it, but because I feel like I'm healthier when I'm kind of sticking with veggies and fish.
Yep.
So it's more kind of driven from a health perspective. But yeah, I always feel like I try to be super, super healthy when I'm working and kind of during the weekend. And that way, like if I have a nice dinner, I go out. I don't have to overthink about what I'm ordering.
Are you a homebody? Do you like to order food in and just chill?
I like that. But I also like to go out. Like I really, this sounds weird, but I do really like both. You know, I definitely, I like my time to myself or I like, you know, time to be with just whoever I'm dating or just be home with friends or whatever. But I also really enjoy going out and wearing a cute dress and going to a fancy restaurant. You know, I like having a mixture.
Do you like to do, I mean, what do you do for fun? Like, what is your idea of fun? Like, where do you go for the holidays? Where do you go on a trip? What do you do?
I'd love to know.
Don't travel a lot?
No, I mean, I travel, but for work, you know. I backpacked in college and loved that. And I did used to travel, but when I had time. But now, because I'm away all the time for work, I just like to be home. I'm always trying to find an excuse to be at my house, you know, here or New York.
Do you really wish you could, I mean, do you want to be able to just do nothing for a while?
Yeah.
Do you hope that, well, you know, there's an easy solution to that. It's the word no.
I know. But see, the thing is, here, we can have this conversation. I try. Like, this stretch of time, I was
hang out with me. I'll teach you how to say it over and over. No. But you get some big offers. Like, I get some offers that are nice every once in a while, but a lot of them are just like, you know what, I don't need to do this.
It's hard when it feels like it could be life-altering in your future in a way that you've dreamed of.
Like
this
podcast.
Yes. I mean, I couldn't say no to this.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I'm developing a project with Sony right now as a director. And if opportunities, if doors start opening with that or there's certain moments, I just feel like, how do I say no? You know, because this is a chance to, as a young filmmaker, female filmmaker, be able to potentially direct a franchise for a major studio.
Yeah. Because you just directed Sundogs.
Yeah.
Which you should see. Where's that? Where can they
get
that?
It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix. Yeah. And Allison Janney's in that?
Yeah, she's amazing.
How was it your first directorial experience? I mean, I directed a movie and it's the hardest thing ever. I made the mistake of being in it, the lead.
Yeah, that's way harder.
But it was just one of the most, and every time I talk to any director, it's the most difficult thing you'll ever do. It's like we're at the end where you just feel like you're going to die.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but I was also so excited. I mean, it was invigorating and life-threatening.
It was. I'm telling you. I just remember being in the car with my friend Tom Dineen, who came out to sort of be my assistants, and they're my best friends, and they're sitting in the car, and we're driving at 6 a.m. to set, and I'm in the back seat, and I just go, this is the volume I had. I could actually, it works because I have a microphone. I think I need to go to the hospital. And Neen goes, she goes, and then switched conversation, but she never looked back to see me. If she looked back at me when I said,
she would have known you meant it.
I think I need to go to the hospital. They would have taken me to the hospital. I was depleted of all energy. There were days where my friend was like, you haven't sat down in 8 hours. You haven't eaten today.
Yeah.
I was like getting too skinny. It was just like so stressed. It was just, it's like, it's a lot.
It is a lot.
But it's, you want to continue this. You potentially might direct a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
You can't talk about that?
I can't get into what it's about, but.
Is it fantasy?
No, actually, it's not. It's, it's like taking a historical figure and making a sort of action hero out of them.
Like George Washington.
Yeah.
He could chuck apples as a superpower.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
But you just can't say anything. Maybe I hit, did I nail that one?
No, George I'm just Washington? Not allowed to talk about it.
Oh, when I said George Washington, you looked at me like, should we edit this part out?
No, no, it's fine. I just, it's not about George Washington, but.
I thought I nailed it.
It's a great pseudonym.
Fucking...
No. No.
I'm an idiot.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
So back home, let's go back because we didn't really talk about that. So your parents were always there. They were always good because you started modeling and acting at such a young age.
Yeah, it was weird though because I wanted to. Like everyone's always like, oh, wait, you were a child actor. Why aren't you more fucked up? The reality is like they didn't really know why I was so obsessed with wanting to do all that. You know, obviously there was a lot of music in the house and I was kind of a nerdy, creative kid. And my mom said I came home from kindergarten one day and said like, yeah, I'm an actor. Why am I not in a play? She was like, I don't know. We'll
what do you mean why you're an actor? Had you done anything? You just said I'm
no,
an actor.
That's just, yeah. I just was like born thinking of myself as an actor for some reason. So they were really supportive, I think, in a way that was helpful to me to be like a whole person eventually. Because they just didn't, they weren't interested in it in the way that I think stage parents seem to be interested in it. They were like, well, as long as you do well in school, you can do this for fun. So it was always the thing I
so
did.
So you found an agent in Arlington, Illinois?
It was crazy. I mean, we literally, it was like in the stars or something. Like really, it was like in my fate. Because when I was like 3 years old, we would be in an elevator and someone would be like, you know, I'm a talent agent. You should really get your kid into this because I was really talkative and not shy and all this stuff. And my parents were always like, no, we've heard all these horror stories. This is not going to happen. And then I would make them take me to Woodfield Mall to line up to audition for the, you know, Woodfield Mall. Yeah. They would to line up for the back to school fashion show auditions. And like 1,000 kids would line up to audition for the fashion show. And they would only pick 25. And every year I was one of the 25. And the people judging that contest were agents. So every year those agents would come to my parents and say, you know, we're interested in my parents. Be like, no, we don't. We've heard all these horror stories. And then as I got a little bit older, closer to 10 years old, I decided to like have a deeper conversation with my parents about it where I was like, well, what if we try? And, you know, if they ask us for money or anything weird, we'll just say no, but at least we'll try. And luckily, my parents were open to that. And they're like, all right, let's try it. You know,
let me guess, you were like the first audition you booked.
No, I was not the first audition. But, you know, I did a lot of print modeling as a kid and then sort of started with that. And then that turned into commercial auditions.
Do you keep any of those old pictures or anything?
Oh, my mom has like albums of them.
Does she ever show you? Look how cute you were.
There's a lot of those pictures around
but you are
the house.
Too.
I appreciate that.
Well, her saying that.
But I haven't seen them in a while, but they're around. They're definitely around.
We should post some of them.
I think I have a couple times in the past.
Hmm.
I don't know.
What about you did a commercial with Michael Jordan?
I was on the cover of Sports Illustrated for Kids with Michael Jordan.
Was he cool?
He was. I was so starstruck and nervous. Like, I was 11.
Did you get his autograph?
I did. But you know what's really sad? I had him sign. No, I didn't throw it away. But I had him sign Air Jordans, which...
You wore.
I wore.
And it just got rid of the autograph?
No, the autograph's there. But can you imagine if I had him sign Air Jordans that he personally gave to me, how much those would be worth now? And instead I was like, yeah, I'm going to wear these to school.
So you have them still?
Yeah, I have them still.
And they're signed.
And they're signed.
But they're dirty.
But they're dirty.
Frame them. or I'll buy them. How much do you want for them?
I don't know.
I'm not kidding around.
Oh, God.
Now, that's exciting. Like, you're a Chicago Bulls fan, Rob. You are too, obviously. All yeah. Cubs and all that shit. I would buy those off you. You say they're not worth anything. I would give you... $250 for a pair.
Oh, well, that's it. Yeah.
I've got a signature and a napkin somewhere if you want to buy that.
And that's shit. But her, first of all, she's a celebrity.
Tiny Air Jordans.
You know what?
They're like
$500.
Little girls.
$1,000.
I don't want to give them up.
$1,000, and you can buy them back anytime for 10% interest.
I don't think they're for sale.
By the way, wouldn't it be weird if I had little girl Air Jordans? I just thought about that.
So weird.
Yeah, why did you? Oh, look at these. Aren't these cool? They're signed by Michael Jordan, but by your sister? I mean, yeah, that's weird. I didn't think of that through.
It's a little weird.
I don't want them.
Okay. I'll keep them.
I never had Michael Jordan's autograph. That would have been really cool.
Yeah, I felt cool for a second.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And you wore them to school?
Yeah. So
you're like,
sad.
Look at my shoes, man.
It was not going to help my social situation.
Were you always smart in school?
Yeah.
What's 8 times 11?
88.
Okay. Just throwing it at you. It was an easy thing.
Thank God it was easy because I can't do math anymore.
Really?
I used to be very good. I used to be quick. I would practice for the math tests. You know, like they'd have those pages and pages and it'd be like, how many can you do in 5 minutes or whatever? And I would get the pages from the teacher and then go home and practice them. And then I'd be like, ready, you know, and I'd always win.
You're always good.
But I can't do, I can't.
What's a symbol for a potassium?
I have no idea.
Rob?
Is that K?
Yes, it's K. You got it, Rob.
Wow.
You wanted to be an actor always, and I guess so you started doing plays in high school,
mm-hmm.
and you were also cheerleading.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're doing everything. Were you popular?
Uh-uh. No.
You weren't popular.
I had, like, one friend.
You're modeling as, like, a 14-year-old kid. You're with Michael Jordan, and you had one friend?
Yep.
You know why? Because they thought you were a bitch because you had those fucking Michael Jordans on.
Yeah.
She's a pompous little pisser, isn't she?
Yeah.
What was it?
There were multiple things that happened. I had an unfortunate sort of social incident when I was like 8.
What happened?
Well,
you went down that rabbit hole.
I know. Well, I mean, I don't know how else to explain why I was so unpopular. Basically, I mean, I peed in my pants in front of the school. Like, that was like, but it's a long story.
I wrote a movie about that.
There's a long story getting to how that happened and why that happened. And it's a very specific reason how we got there and how that happened. But it was just one of those things that, like, once that happens and you're going to school all the way through high school with the same group of kids, I was sort of raised in a way where we were taught to always turn the other cheek, you know, like never
fight back.
And I understand it as an adult looking back. I understand that mentality, but I think it really would have served me to have just stood my ground a little bit. And so in addition to that having happened, I didn't ever really stand up for myself. So it became kind of sport to make fun of me, and that never went away. And that kind of just stuck with me. And then
did they have a nickname for you?
God, I can't even imagine, I'm sure. And then I was away a lot because I was doing modeling and acting and all this stuff. So then, and in addition to all of that, I wasn't there. It's so much easier to continue to grow that mythology about someone when they're not around, you know? So, you know, it's funny because somebody was saying around one of the one really good friend that I had from grade school, Eileen, we were home for holidays or something. And he was like, yeah, sure. Of course she didn't have any friends. And like sort of thought I was making it up. And she was like, oh no, I would not wish on anyone what she went through. And she doesn't even know the half of it.
Oh my God, Jen.
And I'm not saying that like, oh, poor me. I'm just saying.
Well, you were bullied.
Yeah, terribly. And so she really was so sweet to go to bat for me like that and just be like, listen, I heard even more than she heard. And it was bad. So you know how kids are, like,
it's terrible. It's just like, you know, it all comes from parenting too. Parents got, you know, they don't teach all I guess my parents were pretty dysfunctional. They were, you know, we've talked about that ad nauseum, but they always wanted me to be nice to people. yeah. and never be mean.
It's very Midwestern,
and
though.
So yeah, maybe it
That's
is.
A, I think it's almost even more cultural than it is parenting. You know, yeah. it's like a very Midwestern thing that I think really probably serves all three of our lives in certain ways, and then also can sort of undermine us in other ways. You know, it's like, it's very tricky sometimes to just go like, you know what, this person's not going to like me. I have to just be okay with it, you know?
Do you think anything that you do now, you're acting, you're modeling, you're away, sort of like you wanted to be away because of all that was going on?
Probably.
And maybe that's why you've become so much of a workaholic, so much of like, there's kind of that, there's got to be some psychology.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's
that.
Like a real safety in that because I have control over that. Yeah, I have control over how hard I work. I have control over, you know, going the distance and making sure I show up and do a good job. I don't have control over whether or not someone likes me or...
I like you.
Well, I appreciate
Rob?
That.
I like you too.
Thanks, yeah. guys.
I like you. So you're likable.
So, you know, I'm sure there's something to that. And also, I always really did... dream big, you know. There were just all these.
You wanted to be a movie star?
Well, I wanted to make things. I had no interest in being famous. I actually never really thought about it because I thought I was going to be on stage, and you don't really equate fame with theater,
right.
you know.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'll probably live paycheck to paycheck, and like had this romantic idea of living in New York and being a theater actor, and that was what I was sort of imagining, you know. I didn't really know to imagine the TV film side of all of it. So that all is something that I had to kind of come to terms with and adjust to and figure out in a different way as that started happening. So it was more just like I wanted to make things. I wanted to direct plays. I wanted to make a character. I want to make things, you know, and I get so excited about that that's when it becomes hard to say no.
And you just did, like you went to Steppenwolf and then you were in the last decade, you've done a couple of Broadway shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
How demanding, to me, I don't know what happened to me, but I was in college and I did a lot of theater, and I got out of college and I did off-Broadway stuff, and, you know, I mean, way the hell off-Broadway, like New Jersey Broadway.
Sure.
And then I started getting TV work, and I was like, I mean, it's just the money's so much better and I could live so much better. And those 3 hours on stage every night and sometimes a double show one or two nights,
mm-hmm.
and the same. My biggest issue was doing the same fucking thing over and over. And I have a problem with that. Even when I'm on a show,
yeah.
I'm playing the same character. It's hard for me. I almost like after I did the pilot of some of these shows.
Yeah, you're like, okay,
I
did
great.
It.
I did that character. I thought I did a great job. Let's go to the next role.
Yeah.
And I wish it could be like that because I guess that's movies. You do yeah. 3 months in a movie, so that's great. So TV, unless it's like now they do 8 to 10 episodes a year, and that's more appealing to me.
That, me too.
Because then yeah. I do 3 or 4 months, and then I'm done for the rest of the year.
Yep.
And that's great because I do get bored, and I put so much into it. Do you exhaust yourself with work? Do you know how to balance yourself? Like, do you get home and I got to study these lines inside out over and over and over and over to the, like, are you a perfectionist?
No, I don't think so. Not with learning lines like that. I feel like I have a system that works for me with that.
Please tell me the system.
I usually write every line 3 times and I feel like I completely see the line differently when I write it because the punctuation kind of disappears and it's like a different tactile experience with the lines that you're saying.
So you just write it? I mean, so you look at it?
Each, like, let's say you have a scene. It's like in the first line, I write the first line 3 times and then I write my second line 3 times and then I'll get all the way through it and then I'll do the whole scene just one line, one time per line all the way through. And then if I still feel like I need some time with it, I'll run lines with my assistant or whoever will run lines with me. But usually once I've said it out loud 2 or 3 times, I know that I know it. And then I do a ton of character work and I do hours and hours and hours of like digging, diving, figuring out who I think this person is. But I don't fixate on it like in the sort of perfectionist line by line way. It's more like, okay, I know this is in me. I know I have these lines and now I want to figure out who this person is and then kind of let the two things come together.
Do you ever on set and you just can't get it? You can't find it. It's not coming there.
It's very rarely.
You know your line's coming. You're disconnected and you can't remember that line. Or you really got a sharp memory.
I have a pretty sharp memory, but it's this muscle that I've been, you know, it really is a muscle, I think, that has been in motion for most of my life. But there were a couple times, I think, on House where we worked such crazy hours on that. And I was so tired all the time. You know, I think there was probably one or two times where I just couldn't get a medical word or something, you know.
Just couldn't get it.
Yeah. And I did eventually, but it just, you know, I just mean like tripped over it a couple times instead of just getting it, you know.
I tend to get really embarrassed. I usually like to get it in the first take and then I get really confident. I got it. Now let's really make it great.
Yeah.
If you don't get it in the first two times, now you're just struggling to get the fucking lines out.
Yeah.
Now your performance is affected.
Yeah, no, I don't ever want that. I always like to know that I know it well enough that it's never going to affect my choices.
I once yelled out in the middle of the set, I go, I'm not good. Today, I'm not good. Everybody mark your fucking calendar. And you know what? That's how I do it because everybody started laughing.
Yeah, and it diffuses it.
Then it diffuses. And I have a tendency to do that where I just want to diffuse things, make people laugh, make people kind of like, and they're all there with me.
Yeah.
You know,
no, that's great.
I don't, are you like that on set or are you kind of quiet? Do you like make friends? Do you like to preserve your energy?
It depends on the set, it depends on the character, and it depends on the day, to be honest. Like there was days on Once Upon a Time where I could be completely lighthearted and talk to anybody and everybody and whatever, and there's days where I had to cry all day or, you know, whatever. And of course I'd be a little bit more quiet that day. I'd have to sort of keep myself in a weird headspace to get through it. Or you know, I think it's easier to be a little more lighthearted on shorter schedules. You know, like if you're doing a film, you're only going to be around these people for whatever, 20 days or 30 days or whatever. When you're doing a show for 6 years and it becomes like a second family, I'm not as like, oh, hey, how are you? You know, because I'm going to see you every day for the next 6 years. And it just becomes a little bit more of a chill interaction. But it really just does kind of depend on what the scenes are that day.
Can you get a paragraph the night before and memorize it for the next day easily?
Usually
it doesn't freak you out. You're not at dinner with someone like talking to your friend Nancy and you're like, oh, Nancy, I just got an email. Oh my God, they changed the pages. I got 3 new pages of dialogue for tomorrow morning first up. That doesn't make your heart beat. That doesn't make you sweat a little. That doesn't give you some, you know, some hives, because it does me.
I would love to have more time than that, but no, it doesn't freak me out.
Shit, who are you? Why are you so together?
I don't know.
Why are you so together, Jennifer Morrison? Besides the pissing in the pants, which a lot of kids do, you just happen to do it in front of other fucking kids.
A lot of people.
You seem like you're first of all, you're intelligent, you're fit as shit. You're fancy, but you're not fancy. you've done well for yourself. You're directing. You're producing. You even, I read, had an associate producer credit on Glee.
Yeah.
You brought Glee to the creator.
Yeah.
And you got only a fucking one first year associate producer credit?
Well, that's a whole other story that we can't get into.
Did you get any money from these guys?
No.
Oh my God, I want to hire a lawyer for you.
No, it's all good. Everything works out the way it's supposed to.
But you still did that, didn't you? You still brought.
And you know, honestly, like for me, I always believed in Ian as a writer, and I still believe in him as a writer. I think he's exceptionally talented, and I also believe that that show was such a special moment on television, and I feel very proud to have been even a small part of it, because I think that was a turning point in terms of what was on television and what people were being open to. You know, putting that much music on television, which most people didn't know they were totally terrified of music when we were shopping that script. And now everyone's like, yeah, of course, Glee. You know, you're like, yeah, well, before Glee, there wasn't Glee. So then no one knew what to do with Glee at the time. And that was Ryan Murphy's genius, figuring out exactly how to handle that music. But the characters that were on there, the LGBTQ issues that they covered and opened up on television, the idea of sort of seeing the inside of the life of these kids who were in the music department, who were theater kids, who were creative and maybe would have been teased or made fun of in some way. And it was giving the world a chance to see this different side of those kids. And so I feel like all I care is that the world got that show. You know, I feel very lucky to have been a little tiny part of that.
I think that's amazing. And I think you're being very kind, but I think there's probably a party that's just still like, you know, hey, it was a huge success and I brought you the thing and I helped you sell it. And, you know, I need something. I mean, that's just life. But that's happened to me many times.
It happens. And you learn from those experiences. I could have protected myself better. I could have made better decisions up front in terms of how I positioned myself and, you know, all those things. And I don't think you get to the place that I am now without learning those lessons on your own. You know, people can tell you and they can say, oh, you should have had this contract or you should have had this agreement.
Sure.
Or, you know, and you just
live and learn.
You just don't know until you've been through making those mistakes on your own. And luckily, I made that mistake in a way that I still can feel very proud of my involvement, you know.
Well, Jane Lynch lives four houses down.
Oh, really?
If you want to go talk to her.
No, she's amazing.
She is amazing.
She's incredible.
She's so fucking funny.
She's so funny.
What was the first thing that your parents were so proud of that you got? A TV show. What was the first like acting role that you got that was like holy shit?
Well, I mean, I booked Intersection when I was 13.
Who was in that movie?
Richard Gere and Sharon Stone.
Oh yeah, that was a big movie. It was a big part.
Yeah, I played their daughter. And
how old were you?
13.
Oh my god.
Playing a little bit younger. I mean, I was a really young 13. I looked maybe 10. But yeah, that was wild. You know, that was life altering in a way that I don't think I even understood was life altering. Because at 13, I was like, this is cool. I had no idea who Richard Gere or Sharon Stone was. I wasn't allowed to watch R-rated movies. So I was like, well, these really nice people are letting me play their daughter.
Well, you're fearless at 13, aren't you?
Totally.
When you're on set, you don't care. You take any direction and you're perfect. Yeah. Do you have that same kind of ability? Because a lot of kids, I think, like Haley Joel Osment, I'm not discrediting him. I'm just saying some child actors, they're so brilliant because they're so uninhibited.
Yeah.
And then fast forward and you lose that. I know I've lost a little bit of that. I'm sure that I've lost that certain, you know, swagger, that certain kind of like, oh, but I mean, I still have it, but I still think that when you're younger, although me, it was different because I wasn't a child actor. I really didn't start till later. But for you, did you have that?
Well, I mean, early on, I think no matter what age you start, there's a freedom because you're not overly planned in what you're doing. You haven't kind of worked out your system or your method of conquering something in some way, which it's great that you can work that, you know, that actors and artists work that out because you have to be able to deliver and you have to be able to deliver no matter how you feel that day. If you're sick, if, I mean, I've literally been like throwing up in a bathroom with an AD going like, are you done? Cause we're ready for you.
Unbelievable. Those days, those days are rough.
It, you know, we've all been there. And, so it's important to have that skill set and that ability to kind of conquer things no matter what, but you do sort of lose the joy of that freedom of like, feeling something for the first time and experiencing something for the first time. And I think I've gotten better at kind of returning to that since I've been directing because I have more faith in the process. I have more faith in the editing. I have more faith just in the plan for the film because I've been through it now enough times that I kind of see how that all goes together. And obviously you have to trust the director to make good choices. But I used to feel a lot of pressure having done so much television that I had to deliver in every take exactly right. And I'd be, you know, good and ready. We had to be
so
able to move on after one take or whatever. And I realized in being in the editing room so much now that oftentimes when people are looser and they kind of screw up at times or drop something or try something new or take a different turn with something that you don't expect.
More options.
That you get all these interesting options. And when you start to build that all together, it makes really, really compelling performances. And so I've really lightened up on myself and I feel like I've gotten back to a freer place since having started to direct when I'm acting.
Do you have fun? Honestly,
I do.
Do you go to work every day excited?
I do.
No matter what the role is?
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, because I still feel like even if it's a character that is under my skin in some way or I'm frustrated with, I still get that rush. I can be super, super tired. And then as soon as we do the first take, my adrenaline is like pumping, you know? So it could be 4 a.m. and I'll be like, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to do this. And then we do like one take and I'm like, all right, I'm in, I'm ready. You know, like.
When's the last time you had butterflies with someone? Like real butterflies?
Recently.
They exist. You recently did.
Yeah.
How recent? This troubles me.
No, it was probably about a year ago. I'm not seeing that person anymore.
But you had butterflies.
Yeah.
I've only had that a couple of times. Isn't that a miraculous feeling?
It is. And
sometimes you try to get it back.
But you can't really.
You've lost that loving feeling. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess that's true. I think like the unexpected is where that comes from. You know what I mean? Like, I think that even with someone you've known for a long time, I don't know. As I've gotten older, I feel like we all are very similar. It's like we want to be understood and we want to feel loved, you know?
Unconditionally.
Like
you're not going to run away. This is who I am.
Yeah. I mean, but I think unconditional is a tricky word because when you say unconditionally, I've been in relationships that were emotionally abusive. When you know that there's a dynamic between you and the other person that is really unhealthy, you know, where certain people activate you or vice versa.
And you can't let that go. You can't dismiss that as unconditional.
No, and I've also been with people who have addiction issues, and that led to certain things that were unhealthy. And it didn't mean I loved them any less. It didn't mean I didn't stop fighting to help them get healthy or support them through that. But I had to, as I was growing up and going through different relationships, get to a point where I was like, oh, there has to be a line. There has to be a line, because you cannot just give yourself up to letting someone use you as their punching bag in some way. An emotional punching bag. No one's ever hit me. You know, I just think that...
That's because you kicked their ass. You're in such shape.
So I think unconditional is a tricky word, because I think it's a beautiful thing to stay and to be present and to know that there's going to be ups and downs, and there's going to be beautiful moments, and there's going to be sort of mellow moments and whatever in relationships. But I think you do have to have a sense of your own boundaries and know when those boundaries are.
I have a rule.
Yeah.
There's some rules. I don't have rules. Mm-hmm. They're not rules. They're more like, if I go on a date with someone and they get shit faced on the first date, probably not going to go out with them again.
Yeah.
That's a major red flag. If they're like, oh, I drink 3 or 4 times a week.
Right.
I'm not going to go out with them.
Right.
I look out ahead of time. I don't want to waste any time in terms of those things.
Yeah, there's certain red flags.
If you have addiction problems, if you have all these things, I don't want to start out with that.
Yeah.
You want somebody that's healthy. And I'm sure we've all gone through it where we don't see it.
It's tricky because you can't control who you're attracted to. You know,
I mean, you can't, like, but you can kind of say, hey, I know this is not good for me. And the more mature you get, you could hopefully say no to those things.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
You agree with that?
I agree.
Do you love yourself?
I do.
You do, without even blinking an eye?
Uh-huh. I do.
Okay.
I wouldn't have been able to always say that.
Really? There were moments?
Oh, for sure. I think I didn't know myself for a really long time. I think it's taken some real serious work to...
Do you go to therapy?
Yeah, I do.
You do?
I have for like 10 years.
Yeah, I go to therapy.
I love it.
I do too.
It's interesting because it's like... I think especially with what we do for a living, I came to a realization, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 years ago, where I was like, oh shit, I spend more hours a day pretending to be someone else than I spend being myself. I had no idea. Like, I'd be on red carpets and people were like, what music do you listen to? And I'd be like, I don't know. I can tell you what music the character listens to. You know, be like, what books do you love? And I'd be like, well, I can tell you what books the character loves.
But doesn't that scare you? That scared you, right?
Yeah, it did. And it scared me into getting to know myself.
And how did you do that? Therapy?
Combination of the therapy. And my morning routine is a really big part of that, because I learned that I need to get up at least 2 hours before I have to be at work, no matter what time. So even if my call time is 5 a.m., I'll get up at 3. And it seems crazy.
Well, even if you don't sleep well.
I'll do my best. I mean, I have
to. Do you take anything to sleep?
No. I have to have at least 4 hours of sleep. I would prefer to have 6 to 8 hours of sleep, but I have to have 4. I can function on 4. So even if it's like going to bed at 11, I know I'm getting up at 3 to be on set at 6. I'm going to be a better version of me, a more creative version of me, and a more settled version of me if I have those 2 hours to be me before.
What do you
do
in those 2 hours?
I get up, I make my bulletproof coffee, and then I put my jazz music on and I write.
Jazz hands. Yeah. You write.
I write.
What do you write?
I just journal, but it's not like, oh, I'm really thinking about this. It's more just kind of getting the busyness out of my mind. Like, there's literally days that I'm like, I'm so tired. I had a green juice yesterday. That green juice was pretty good. You know, like, it's like throwing up what's in my brain, you know? But it's amazing how settling that is. And then also, I very, very rarely reread any of it because I'm not writing it to have any kind of result.
Right.
But occasionally, I will look back and you start to see patterns, you know, like, oh, wow, I'm really fixated on thinking about this one thing, or I've really been bothered by this thing for a long time because it's been coming up for the last 6 months, or, you know, it's an interesting way to start seeing your own patterns because you're so tired at that point in the morning and kind of unguarded that you really are just throwing up your thoughts.
I started to write journals, and then I thought, you know what, if I die, someone's gonna read this and it's gonna be, embarrassing.
That. Yeah.
But then I'm like, aren't you gonna be dead though?
Right.
But still, it'd be embarrassing knowing that I wrote that.
It would be.
Dead.
I agree. And Rob? It does worry me, but I
yeah, I'd be embarrassed for you.
I know you would. What an idiot.
I feel like I gain too much to worry too much about that. So I do that. And then I go through my emails. I like starting the day knowing that there's like zero unread emails in my
email
box.
Yeah, I'm anal about that. I like to just get off those top emails or drag them to a folder.
Love those folders.
Love those folders. There's a lot of filled folders. I got to get back to some of those people. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
What's next? I mean, you're 39. You've got everything going for you. Do you ever think, you know, I'd like a family. I'd like to get it going. I'd like to...
Yeah, I mean, I think the way I feel about a family is this, you know, because obviously it's interesting because it's something people ask women and they almost never ask men.
People ask me all the time, but I'm asking you because you had such a great childhood that I'm surprised that, you know.
Yeah, no, I wasn't saying that as a judgment of asking me the question. I just, calm down.
Sorry about that.
Only asked our female guests.
That's not true. I ask guys all the time.
Never.
What are you talking about? Stephen Amell, we talked about his divorce.
Uh-huh.
Tom Welling talked about his divorce. Go on.
Anyway, Jen. It's fine.
I can go on about that.
No, it's something that women have to think about differently because of the way we're questioned about it. And I think I always imagined my future with kids and a family. And then I have worked nonstop. I don't feel 39. You know, my brain's like, holy cow, this is crazy. I froze my eggs, you know, a few years ago so that I just kind of took the problem off the table, you know? So I feel like the best way for women to have a real, true, equal footing with men is to freeze their eggs because the reason...
Wait, would you say an issue? Would you say
a... The best way for them to have equal footing with men, at least in a work environment, is to freeze your eggs because oftentimes women have to step away from their careers because they have to stop to have kids because they're worried about the timing.
Right.
I know people who've, you know, married people they probably shouldn't marry or had kids with people they probably shouldn't have kids with because they feel a ticking time clock, you know? And so I didn't ever want to be in that situation because I feel like if I choose to have a family, it's because I want a family unit. I don't need to have a kid by myself to feel okay about my life. I totally respect people who feel that way, but I don't feel that way. But I do feel like if I end up in a relationship with someone where we feel like we want to have a family, we'd like to have a family unit,
yes.
I want to know that that option is there and it doesn't really matter when that happens.
Yeah, well, that's great. I feel like for me too, it's like people say, well, are you never get married? You'd be a great dad. You'd mm-hmm. be great. And I go, yeah, yeah. You know what? Somebody said it so simply, because you need to say things simply mm-hmm. to me sometimes. But they said, you know, my wife and I, we started dating and we just got along so well and really loved each other and did everything together. And finally, it was just like, we'll get married.
Yeah.
And then we were just married. And then all of a sudden we're married and we're like, it just felt, everything just felt like it should.
Yeah.
And then you had kids. Look, there's always mistakes or not mistakes, but
right, no.
Things, but I like to think that I just go with the flow. It's like if you meet somebody and it's a no-brainer, then there it is. If not, then wait for the no-brainer.
Right.
Or not.
Yeah. And I, you know, that's the other thing is like, I have a great life, you know?
Yeah, you do have a great life.
I've really
You have a pool.
I do have a pool.
I don't have a pool.
You have a hot tub and a sauna. You're doing
The sauna was like $3,000. I got it installed in my backyard. The jacuzzi was there when I moved in.
I don't have a sauna.
Yeah, well, you will when this show blows up. You will be getting a sauna.
I don't know what I was talking about.
Yeah, you're talking about your pool.
You brought up the pool.
No, we went from freezing.
We went from freezing my eggs to the pool. I'm not sure how we made that.
Well, sometimes my eggs.
You were thinking about your eggs in my pool, and that's scary.
No, my eggs. I'm going to choke on my water. My hint water. You ever drink hint water? They're good. They don't even give me money. They just give me free product, but they're really good.
That's nice.
Yeah.
No, but, that's what I was going to say. You know, people have this idea that you have to be married by a certain age or certain things have to happen by a certain age. And it's like, I just don't want to force anything. I've had long relationships. I've had short relationships.
What
I enjoy dating.
A guy?
I don't know.
Partner.
I
would say it's a tough one. But honestly, isn't it somebody you're just like, I love being around them.
Yeah, you want to be around them all the time.
This is fun.
Yeah.
It's easy.
Yeah. And it's not always going to be easy, but it should start easy. That's my theory.
I think it should always be easy. And like even when it's not easy, it's still easier.
Yeah. 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 But I think that's a good way of putting it. I want a real partner. But I want to be able to share life with someone, you know.
Yeah.
You want to go to a concert with them. You want to like go to a ball game with them. You want to call them at the end of your day and be like, this was great or this was terrible, or you know.
I'm a FaceTimer. Are you a FaceTimer?
I am a FaceTimer.
I like to see the person. A lot of people think, I FaceTime my grandparents every day.
Mm-hmm.
I FaceTime my assistant, my friend Rob here. Oh, he doesn't have FaceTime.
I don't FaceTime my assistant. That's interesting.
Well, she's awesome. She's like my, honestly, like my sister. She's family.
Okay.
She is. I talk to her. I FaceTime her mother and father.
That's amazing.
It is. Like, they're really amazing. And I'm envious because she has, I'm usually envious of people who have good parents. Like, I'm not to say, like, my dad just turned over a new leaf. He's really trying. He's more fun to be around. But for many, many years, it was very difficult. My mother's a very difficult person. I love them both.
Right.
Unconditionally. Like, I love them. I envy those people that have good parents and just parents that are supportive and love their kids unconditionally. And I know that word, but with parenting, it's different.
Yeah, no, I do. And I didn't mean to like judge that word. I just feel like it gets thrown around sometimes in a way that...
No, unconditionally?
Women in particular sometimes get trapped in feeling like they have to be...
Yeah,
well, I'm supposed to love him unconditionally. And it's like, ugh, actually, you should have some boundaries.
Yeah, I don't think those things when unconditional comes in. I'm thinking more like, Michael's a little immature, but he's really responsible. Michael's, he's always joking about everything.
Mm-hmm.
He's always making light of everything. You know, Mike, to me, that's what I think unconditional. You just go, this is just who he is.
Oh, you accept someone for who they are, yes.
Right, but I'm not talking about like if all of a sudden, oh, Michael just did heroin. He's fine. That's not what I'm talking about here, Jen.
Fair.
It's okay for your parents to unconditionally love you, but
right.
That sets you up to expect that out of a relationship. And
yes.
That's not good.
I agree with that. Like if Jen, you know, if Jen was here talking about how she's, you know, drinking 4 or 5 drinks a night, I'd be worried about her and I'd probably ask her if she needs any help, but I wouldn't date her. I wouldn't unconditionally love her. That's not part of that word. You know what I mean? You have an animal.
I do.
You have a dog.
I have a dog.
What's the dog's name?
Ava.
Ava. That's my sister's middle. Oh, no, that's her first name. No, it's a half-sister.
You forgot her name?
You just messed that
because
up.
It's my dad's second marriage. Okay. I love her. She's my sister, but I didn't think like that, you know.
Got it.
Do you think there's something to be said about, like, if your mother has a kid, if you're, like, for instance, my mother obviously gave birth to my brother before she, all right, listen to this. I'm going to simplify.
I'm following.
You will follow.
I'm listening.
So my mom was married before.
Okay.
She had my brother and my sister.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then married my dad and had me and
okay.
my brother.
Okay.
And then my dad remarried and had 2 other kids.
That's a lot of kids.
When your father remarries someone and that woman, your stepmother, has a child,
mm-hmm.
what is that? That's your stepsister?
Yeah. Oh. Because
it comes out of the womb.
Coming, yeah, but they're coming from another father, not your father
right.
with
if
that
it's
woman.
What's the one? It's a father's a step. I think the mother is a half.
No, it's a half if you're blood related between one parent.
Well, what I just said. Well, no, then so they're both.
It
half.
Would be a step. No, it would be a step brother-in-law.
Not brother-in-law. This is
because in-laws marriage.
Oh, yeah.
So it would be my.
But they came to him through marriage because
I think if it comes out of the mom's womb, you're closer with that person.
Okay.
Because you both came out of the same thing.
Oh, your mom's.
Yeah,
I see.
So, but if you came out of a different vagina. Does this make sense at all? It does, though, in a weird way. You're thinking it does make sense.
I don't know. My brain.
My mother had some 2 kids out of her vagine, and am I closer than them that my father, who had sex with a woman and it came out of her vagine,
right.
who I'm not related to?
But it's still his, and that's
but
your
But it's still your father's. That's it's your... not someone else's with that woman.
To me, there's something closer about, I think, a mother's vagine.
Yeah, they're your half-sibling, then.
What?
Yeah, but either way, it's a half-sibling.
I was right.
It's a half-sibling.
Well, I scored it right.
Unless she had a kid with someone else and then they got married, then they become a stepkid.
Trivia question, Jen. How many times has my sister been married?
How many times has your sister been married? Well, according to the signal I just got across the room, 3?
4. You were wrong, Rob. You don't know me at all. 4. My sister's been married 4. Mom's
Wait,
3.
Wait, so what? So, but you've never been married, right?
I haven't been married. Don't shake your head and look down like this is an impossibility. Like
no,
an implausible
don't deflect
thing.
The question over there.
Listen to me. I have matured.
I'm not judging you. I'm just saying I haven't been married. You haven't been married.
No. The reason I haven't been married, like, look, it took me a while. I guess, you know, I'm 46 now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think through my 20s and early 30s, I was kind of like, you know, and there's a difference. Let me tell you something. There's a difference between a player and there's a difference between just a guy who goes out with a lot of girls. I was the guy who went out with a lot of girls.
The difference?
I'll tell you right now. If you go out with a lot of girls and you're honest about everything and you're just like, hey, I'm not looking for anything, there's nothing fucking wrong with that. I don't care what anybody says.
That's true.
If you're a player and you're just talking girls into going out or sleeping with you, or that's a player.
And kind of promising things that you're not.
You're just promising things. And I know people like that. I used to know people like that. But I never was that guy. I was never the guy who was like, I love you. The word love, if you get me to say love, I fucking love you.
Right.
All right?
Yeah.
So when I hit about 35 years old, that's when I really started getting into relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had some long-term relationships, and that's, and I felt that I like that. I like to, you know, I don't like dating. It's not fun.
No.
It's like, you know, it's, I don't have time. I have this. And you're like, my friend wants to hook you up. I don't know this. Just the dating. I just don't really have time for it. Yeah. So what I do is I go on a lunch date, because lunch is not a date.
Interesting.
Lunch, unless you know someone a little bit, but lunch is an hour.
That's true.
Hey, how was your burger? Great. It was so nice meeting you. If you like them enough, you say, hey, let's turn that burger into a steak. Or let's go vegan. Let's gracias madres. What's it called?
Madres.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I do.
So I like to do that. Make it casual and easy. And then if it goes in, because I don't want to waste anybody's time. I don't want to spend 3 hours on a date with someone I'm just not, right off the bat, I'm not into.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's it. Okay.
Where was I going with that?
No, you're talking about the difference between a player and a... And
oh, yeah, I was
someone
talking
who
about
dates
that,
a lot of people.
But then I started dating, you know, because ultimately I like to, you know, at the end of the day, like you said, it's nice to call someone and FaceTime them before you go to bed and go, blah, 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 about your day, and laugh and go, oh my God, here's my dog. Look at the puppy's face. Isn't
this
cute? And just the same. And you just go, when you watch a movie and you fall asleep and you watch Dateline, or you go out to eat, or you just go show up on their set, or and you just support them, man.
Yeah.
That's, and like,
it's nice.
When two people support you unconditionally, and we use that word loosely.
I feel like I've ruined your experience of the unconditional.
No, I think that's very, I think that's smart to because I think some people might misinterpret
that
word. Yeah,
you give the wrong impression.
Yeah,
well, it's
I think
you just saw it being at the conventions and stuff. And the fan base that specifically for Once Upon a Time is a lot of young women.
Yeah.
And I'm learning in this experience with the show that it's a lot of young women who don't necessarily have a lot of role models at home, and they look to the characters on the show as their role models or as people who set the example for them. And I get asked a lot of questions that I never expected to be asked by strangers, you know, and these girls put a lot of stock into the answer that I give them. So I try to be thoughtful about it. And I feel like I've had a lot of conversations over the years with young women who are not necessarily in healthy situations. And that's kind of why I became sensitive to it, because I've just happened to encounter a lot of women sort of looking for advice or guidance that I'm not really, you know, it's not like I'm a therapist. It's not like I'm qualified to give answers to that. But no matter what I say, I'm trying to be as responsible about my answer as possible, because I feel like they really are looking to me and the character in some way to be some kind of guiding light or something.
Do you feel like at these conventions, a lot of people don't understand, like, first of all, conventions are, they're an amazing thing that some of us are lucky
so
to
lucky.
Be a part of, like, you know, on a sci-fi show or something that just hits the public in a certain way and affects them over many years. And they just, there's a connection. And so you go to these conventions, you sign autographs, you do panels, you do pictures. And I like to look at it as, some people are like, wait, you know, some people, you know, say, well, so these people pay for a freaking autograph. And I'm like, well, you don't realize this. First of all, I went to conventions before I was an actor.
Oh, I love that.
I went to horror movie conventions and paid $15, $20, whatever it was to get a guy from Night of the Living Dead's autograph or whatever. And I just slept with five guys in a one bedroom hotel room.
Yeah.
So I love that stuff. So when I go to these things, it's like, imagine we go to Cabo or we go to somewhere special for a vacation, somewhere fun. For the people that go to the conventions, to them, this is their vacation. This is what they've saved up for. So they can cosplay. They can shop. I buy shit all the time. I just bought this awesome Dracula portrait that's coming from the last convention we were at. It's like a vacation for them. So when they go there, they're going to say, I'm going to get Jennifer Morrison's autograph, and I'm going to get a picture. I'm going to go to her panel, and then I'm going to skip over and go to Dave Bautista from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep.
If we have time and maybe a few dollars left over, we'll go to Michael Rosen. You know what I'm saying? And so I'm okay with that. And what I do, what I don't like seeing is when actors show up and they don't really, they just sign and there's no.
Yeah.
And I don't
know.
See much of that, because mostly everybody's cool. Everybody's got their own personality.
Yeah, I think the people who kind of get on that sort of bandwagon, they're there for the right reasons, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I hug everybody. I'm laughing. I want to talk to them. I cry. Like, some people tell me, like, that's why I started talking about this, about your story, because I'm sure it's emotional.
Yeah.
Like, how could a TV show or a movie affect someone's life? It's amazing. Like, I have guys from Iraq saying, your Smallville DVDs got us through. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? You're the bravest people in the world. You got
it's
us through.
Really wild. I know. It's such an interesting mutually loving relationship, I guess. You know, it's like we get to do what we love because they watch the show, and then what they're sort of getting out of the show or projecting into what they're watching gives them something in their life. It's really something I didn't expect, and it will never stop taking me by surprise, to be honest.
This is so awesome. I feel like I could talk to you forever. I mean, you're really easy to talk to.
Thanks. We've done your research.
I really haven't. I got this morning and I just kind of glanced over. I really don't do a lot because mostly I want to just talk about you and find things out. I want to know some things. Mm-hmm. Bill Meeks at Bill Meeks, dealing with the once fandom was like the Once Upon a Time. So you just explained that.
Yeah.
They could be rascals, he said.
Oh,
what does
really?
That mean?
I don't know. I think, you know.
Hardcore, tough.
I had this realization at a sporting event a few years ago. I was at a baseball game. I promise this is going to come back to this question. It's going to seem like a real diversion, but I promise I'm aiming at this.
Right.
Because I played piano as a kid. I played instruments as a kid. I did all these things where it required a lot of practice and a lot of sacrifice to do something well. And so my heart really goes out to anyone who has to like really sacrifice to do something well. And I feel that for all athletes, because you have to sacrifice so much to be extraordinary enough to play pro ball. So I'll go to baseball games, and even though I might be rooting for a certain team, I still have a reverence for all the players because I know they've all sacrificed that way to get there, and they've all worked that hard. And so I would get riled up listening to people be like, "Yo, fuck you, and fuck your mother. Your mother's ugly." You know, like whatever, they like scream shit at the other team because that's what you do at a sporting event for some people. You know, like they go and they get their crazy week out by being against the other team.
They're passionate. Yeah. They're competitive. They're...
Yeah. And I'll be sitting there being like, "Be nice to them. They've worked really hard. I know they're not on your side, but you know, and I mean, that's what I'm feeling inside." And I was sitting there in the midst of kind of some negative stuff kind of coming up on Twitter and Instagram and whatever with Once Upon a Time at the time, and watching this go down at a baseball game. And I was like, oh, Twitter is like being at a baseball game, you know, in terms of people kind of wanting to pick sides. They want to take their side. They want to have their ship that they like. They want to, and they want it to be competitive because they need an outlet for that energy in their life. They need something
that they're not getting.
Yeah, they need to push against something. You know, they need to be mad at something. They need to blame something. And I believe in that. I think it's like why I want to go box. You know, I don't really want to hit someone, but I love hitting the mitts because it gives me that like release of.
Do you box a little?
Yeah.
I box.
Yeah.
I love boxing.
It's great.
Not your point. Go ahead.
But anyway, so what I realized and I kind of found peace with was that there was, as hard as it can be sometimes to have negative things said about a show or a performance or two characters being together, whatever, there is something actually healthy about people expressing themselves that way and sort of having an arena to get that out. And I just sort of started looking at it like, oh, we're just sort of part of a sporting event in some way, you know? And I think if they were really in front of me, wouldn't necessarily be like, I hate you because you didn't end up with this guy on the show.
They don't really hate you.
No. Yeah. They'd be like, I love the show, but I love to like get frustrated about this or whatever. So, you know, to each his own. And I think ultimately, if what you're doing for a living creatively is getting people talking and riling people up and giving them something to interact over, like that's a win, you know?
What Katie Lang say? Was it Katie Lang? Let's give them something to talk about.
Yeah.
Remember Step Brothers?
Exactly.
Remember when he sings that?
Yeah.
Remember when he sings that to John C. Reilly?
Yes.
And he goes, no, sing. And he goes, let's give talk about love. I was like, I don't know. I was just, I don't know. I don't, my voice, it's not really good right now. Oh my God, that movie. Hilarious. What at Cal Levi, what film franchise would you like to be a part of?
That's a good question. I don't know if they're gonna make any more of them, but I love the Lord of the Rings movies.
I only watched the first two.
Yeah, I really like those. I feel like that would be fun.
I'm friends with Dominic Monaghan, name dropper.
Oh.
Yeah, he was on the show. He's great, man. What a guy. And he just got a role in Star Wars.
Oh, wow.
What a lucky fuck, right?
I mean,
Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, the two biggest trilogies. He could just do conventions the rest of his life.
Yeah, totally.
Well, Emily Sudol, love her, at Ian Sue. What was your favorite House quote from Hugh Laurie?
I always have trouble remembering stuff.
Me
I'm
too.
Sure that there was something that was better than this, but the thing that I always remember, because I felt like it was kind of the central theme of the show, was "Everybody Lies."
Everybody lies.
Yeah, that was the that was sort of the that was kind of the underlying thing for House in every episode, because
sounds like House of Lies.
The doctors that they interviewed for the show always said there's always a doorknob question. You know, you go in, you like examine the patient, you ask them all these questions, and you're like, is there anything else? And you go, oh, no, I'm good. And then the doctor turns around, they put their hand on the door and they go, well, actually, there's always like a well, actually, when their hand's in the door.
Right.
And then you can sort of unwind the previous lies, is what these doctors said, you know, that everyone sort of doesn't even realize how much they lie about their medical history. And so anyway, David Shore really kind of threaded that through, I think, all of the episodes in different ways. And the way that House viewed the world was that he assumed everyone was lying, and that's how he could kind of be smarter than everybody else.
It was a great show.
It was really
what
good.
What a fantastic show.
I felt very lucky to have been a part of that.
It was beyond for a network show, too. It was just like phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, Medina 102, we'll finish with this one. What does Jennifer think was the most interesting medical condition that she worked on, diagnosed during House? I think I like that question. Come on, wasn't there a guy with like something like with his butthole, something like something got stuck in his beehole? And
I'm sure. I don't
remember.
You remember
that one.
Telling you, I cannot tell you how much I forgot from those years of my life. I just remember that I was always, there was always some sort of bodily fluid on me in the show. It was like every episode someone either threw up on me, coughed blood on me, peed on me. It was absolutely incredible how often Cameron ended up with some sort of bodily fluid on her.
Oh my gosh.
That's what I remember the most.
This has been really terrific. Thank you for allowing me to be inside of you. You can say anything. People say many things or nothing.
What's the best thing someone said back to that?
I enjoyed having you inside of me.
Oh, okay.
That's been said mostly by dudes. No, but this has been a real treat. You know, we sort of knew each other. We met at the con. You helped me get my dog.
Yeah.
Because you were like, this dog's so cute. And I was like, oh, I'm thinking about rescuing him. And the Utah Humane Society, I'll give a shout out to. They've been phenomenal.
Yeah.
And Trish Helfer took my dog back with me.
She flew the dog back.
I've already sent her flowers. I'm taking her out to dinner one night. We're buddies. And funny enough, I don't know if you read my Instagram post. Did you read that?
I haven't.
Oh, of course you didn't. You're too busy.
Sorry, it's been a really crazy week.
No, I'm kidding. I'm a joking. Okay. What's his name?
I don't know what you're talking about.
The guy from Kyle Drago.
Oh, yeah.
Jason Momoa. He helped her carry the dog off the plane and was like, this is Rosenbaum's dog. You know, the guy from Game of Thrones.
I witnessed that.
You saw that? He really did that? That was a true story?
Yeah.
I think that's so cool. So you were all on the plane.
We were all on the plane.
So My Little Pup,
yeah,
was in the plane with all these big celebs.
Yeah, with all the people from the convention.
Who else was there on that plane?
You know who else was randomly there who I didn't see until afterwards and get a text from was Wilmer Valderrama.
Oh, Wilmer.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was there.
I don't think he was at the convention. I think he was just in Salt Lake for something else. But he was on the plane and Jason was on the plane. Trish was on the plane. I was on the plane with Jessica, who you met with me.
I love Jessica.
She's the best.
Shout out to Jessica.
Yeah, Jessica Herman.
She loved me, didn't she?
She
did.
She's great. Yeah.
She loved me, right?
No, I'm like, she loves you.
She really loved me.
I was like, I just was like, I should probably quantify that because she like loved you in a friendly way.
Yeah, she's married. Oh, yeah. No.
I was like, I didn't want to like misconstrue that.
But I really liked her.
There's a reason I drag her to all
these
things.
If that plane went down,
oh,
what number would they have read your name on the news?
I don't know. I think probably, I'm guessing Jason would have been first.
Jason Momoa.
Wilmer might have been up there.
Wilmer Valderrama, number two from the 70s show.
Yeah. Probably number three.
All right. That's number three, top three.
Maybe.
I always thought like if I ever fly with like Matthew McConaughey, it's like I don't even make the news if I die. It's like, all right. It's like, yeah, Matthew McConaughey died on Delta Airlines flight 276. No one cares about anyone else on that plane.
Aw.
No, it's not true. My mom would care.
Of course, she would care. I would care.
You'd care?
Of course.
Where do you live?
West Hollywood.
How many years have you lived there?
Since 2011.
You love your place?
I do.
Do you go back to Illinois?
Yeah. I mean, my parents still live in the house I grew up in.
Are they extremely proud of you?
I think so.
You think so? What do you mean you think so?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they're proud of me.
Do they say, Jen, I love you every time you talk to them?
Yeah.
Do you kiss your mom?
I mean, on the cheek. I don't know. This is weird.
Why is it weird? Do you kiss your mom? Like, you know, I don't give my mom a kiss. I give her a hug. I don't really kiss her.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
I'm a hugger.
I'm a hugger. I think I'm more of a hugger.
Yeah, so why is it a weird question? You hug or kiss?
I think we hug.
Well, Rob, what do you do?
Hugger.
You don't kiss your mom?
Nope.
You really don't? Jennifer Morrison, this has been a real treat. I'm glad you came on the show.
I'm glad I came on the show too.
Yeah, will you come back?
Of course.
You will?
Yeah, no problem.
Where can people reach you on Instagram and Twitter?
Jen Morrison Live with one N. So Jen Morrison Live.
And what about Instagram or Twitter?
Same thing. They're all Jen Morrison Live. It was because I launched my Twitter or Instagram? I can't remember which, but on Jimmy Kimmel Live, like 10 years ago or something. So that's where the Jen Morrison Live came from.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah. I don't know where that came from.
Yeah.
And what's next for you? You're looking to direct again?
Yeah, well, I'm developing that project with Sony. I'm attached to an indie film that I'm trying to kind of figure out when I want to put my foot on the accelerator with. And then I've been offered a couple of things as an actor.
Do you get offers all the time?
I mean,
like every week,
what's
do you get
all
an
the
offer?
Time? Not every week.
Every other week.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things I don't know about too. Like, there's only certain things
that they just turn down before they get to you.
To me, yeah.
What's the most recent thing you turned down?
Well, no, I mean, the most recent thing was not a direct offer yet. It was like, if you sit down with them, this will be an offer. And I wasn't ready to go back to
TV.
Yeah. I'll get there. It's just,
you need some time.
I do.
Well, I like hearing you say that. When's the next time you're going to take a 2-week vacation?
It was supposed to be right now, but that went away, unfortunately.
Why? Because of the Sony stuff?
Yeah, the Sony stuff.
Because
this podcast came up and I just... things come up that are so tricky. You know, it's like the Sony thing where you just don't know when certain deadlines or certain opportunities are going to come and you feel like you have to deal with it as it comes. And then, you know, I was just talking to my agents today about a project that's for Showtime that sounds amazing and is one of those things that I would have to chase a little bit, but I feel like we've got
a pilot?
It's a limited series. It's an 8-episode miniseries.
Is it the one that takes place in like Atlanta or something?
I don't know. I don't know anything about it.
Yeah,
this was a phone call on my way here. But it was just, you know, it's very rare for them to call and be like, we feel really strongly. This is a great next move. You know, and it's not an offer, but I have a lot of people in my corner on it and it would be a smaller fight than other fights, you know?
Yeah.
And so then just having to decide like, okay, if I want to fight for it, I still have to read the scripts. I have to.
Do you read scripts pretty quickly?
I do.
You like reading scripts?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, I don't like getting backed up and having a pile of them to work through. I don't like having things like hanging over me that I feel like I need to get done. I'd like to just like kind of have stuff taken care of. And
I think you should just, did you ever feel like you're having a nervous breakdown?
I definitely had those moments. I mean, I'm not having one now.
I mean, on this podcast, I hope not. But like, you ever feel like I'm overwhelmed right now? I just can't do this. I'm directing. I'm writing. I'm producing. I'm this. I'm journaling. I'm getting up 2 hours early every day.
Yeah.
I'm in the best shape of my life. I can't. My eggs are free. Freezed.
Frozen.
Freezed. Who says
they were freezed?
I graduated from Western Kentucky. All right. So I mean, yeah, you probably have to have those days. That's why I'm saying it's not a bad idea to say, hey, agents, I'm taking a little break. Don't call me unless Spielberg's calling.
Right.
2 weeks. Give me 2 weeks or two
months.
Yeah,
but see, sometimes it's hard because it's not even the agents that are calling. Like today it happened to be. But like sometimes it comes directly to me because of the relationships that you develop in the industry. So it's like there's not really a way to have a firewall against it, you know?
You know what I would do? If I were dating you, if I was your boyfriend,
uh-huh.
I'm just saying,
yeah.
I would just say, hey,
no.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or whatever.
Yeah.
3 days, we're just going up the coast. We're just going to drive. We're going to go to a cool little place, and we're going to we're going to chill, and we're going to turn off our phones and listen to shitty music and eat shitty food and have some fun.
I do feel like it's easier for me to justify that when I'm seeing someone. I think I'm better at that when I'm dating someone than I am when I'm not. I feel like
you don't want to be alone.
I'm alone all the time.
But do you like being alone?
I don't mind it, but I feel like I have more permission for whatever reason in my own brain to kind of, you know, there's maybe it's that Midwestern thing, you know, if someone's like, where were you the last 3 days? It's like, oh, well, you know, I haven't seen my boyfriend and we went up the coast to hang out for 3 days. They're like, oh, right. If someone's like, where were you for the last 3 days? Didn't answer your phone. I'm like, well, I just didn't feel like answering the phone. They're like, what a bitch. You know what I mean? Like somehow it's just more justifiable if there's like a reason, you know?
This is one of the longest interviews I've had in a while.
Sorry, I can stop talking.
No, this is my fault.
Okay.
I think that what the problem is I just like talking to you.
You could also like cut out a bunch.
I don't really think there's not much. Isn't it good?
Yeah, it's good.
I hope people like this as much as I do because it's
thanks.
A real treat. You've been a real treat. We'll end it there.
Okay.
Thanks, Jen Morrison.
Thank you.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone's senior writer, Brian Hyatt.
Now, here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.